the very first station that they built 100% internally was Sirius Alku. So it was a real strong message to send about their support for, you know, doing this kind of programming.
Adam and Steve is about these two guys who meet in 1987 when they're 21, and they have this sort of disastrous one-night stand. And they meet again later, 17 years later now, but they don't recognize each other. So the movie's sort of this suspense comedy, basically.
I don't see why sober people still get to smoke. Nicotine is such a drug.
Yeah, but nicotine doesn't make me wander through gay bars, pinching my nipples and moaning, pick me to hot guys.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Euro activists battle prejudice against pride. Stern is the king to out-cues queen, seriously, and an admired gay actor directs a new romantic comedy. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Kathy Sanchez.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 29th, 2006. Philip Braun of Germany and Rosana Flamer Caldera of Sri Lanka were elected co-secretaries general of the International Lesbian and Gay Association, or ILGA, during the group's 23rd World Conference in Geneva earlier this month. The organization also created a transgender secretariat and elected Sweden's National Federation for Sexual Equality, or RFSL, as women's secretariat. ILGA was founded in 1978 and has more than 500 national and local LGBT member organizations from about 90 countries. The global group holds world conferences every 2 years. The 2008 meeting will be held in Quebec, and the 2010 gathering is planned for Moscow. A public demonstration was also held in Geneva during ILGA's April conference, protesting Moscow Mayor Yuri Luzhkov's promise to ban the city's first ever pride parade, scheduled to take place on May 27th.
Gay and lesbian activists in the Latvian capital of Riga say they'll stage a second annual pride parade, despite their harrowing experiences at a first ever march in 2005. Last year's parade by about 150 marchers was completely overwhelmed by some 1,000 protesters shouting obscenities, throwing bottles and rotten eggs, blocking the streets and forcing the procession to be rerouted. In the end, police had to form a human chain around the marchers to keep them safe. A new LGBT group called Mosaic is organizing this year's march, planned for July 22nd, and has promised better planning and public education prior to the event. This year, a wider and more professional circle of people are involved, a Mosaic spokesperson said. LGBT marches and demonstrations have been hindered, banned, or faced violent protests in other European cities in recent years, including Belgrade, Chisinau, Bucharest, Zagreb, Warsaw, Krakow, and Poznan. The European Court of Human Rights has previously said that countries have a duty to protect those exercising their rights of peaceful assembly from violent attacks by counter-demonstrators.
But the Pride Committee in the Canadian capital of Ottawa is effectively bankrupt, the Ottawa Citizen newspaper has reported. Ottawa Gatineau Pride is $187,000 in debt and needs an infusion of $25,000 from the city government to stay afloat and stage this year's parade and festival, the committee says. After poor returns in past years, the festival's traditional supporters have been slow to sign on for this year's events. If we don't have a festival this year, then there's no guarantee we can pay back the creditors, committee member Tamara Stamis told the paper. Ironically, about $66,000 of the existing debt is owed to the city. Another $100,000 is owed to local businesses, some of which have agreed to accept repayment at 25 cents on the dollar.
Gays and lesbians in Israel took part for the first time this week in the country's Holocaust Remembrance Day, which honors the millions killed by the Nazis. Two representatives of the LGBT group Jerusalem Open House laid a wreath representing the queer community at the foot of the Warsaw Ghetto Rebellion Monument in the Holocaust Center. An estimated 5,000 to 15,000 gay people arrested as sexual deviants were forced to wear pink triangles and sent to concentration camps and gas chambers during the Nazi regime. Amir Sumakai Fink, one of the Jerusalem Open House members laying the symbolic wreath, said, "As a gay man and as the son of a family of Holocaust survivors, I felt that I was closing a circle by participating in the ceremony as a representative of the GLBT community.
British nationals living in Hong Kong won't be able to legally marry their same-gender partners there. Under the civil partnerships legislation that took effect in the UK in December, British gays and lesbians can legally marry their partners at consulates in other countries, but only if the host nation has no objections. 14 countries, including Venezuela, Turkmenistan, Colombia, Belarus, the U.S., Japan, and Vietnam, have given the okay. But the Hong Kong government has informed us that it does not consider it appropriate to agree to the registration of civil partnerships of same-sex couples at the British Consulate General Hong Kong at present, the consulate announced on its website last week. While homosexuality was decriminalized there in 1991, a Home Affairs Bureau spokesperson said the Hong Kong government withheld approval for the civil partnership registrations because, perhaps ironically, it's still considering how to address anti-lesbigay discrimination.
Two-thirds of lesbian and a third of gay male couples in the U.S. plan to add children to their families over the next 3 years, according to a survey released this week. Those numbers have increased dramatically over the past 4 years, according to Jeffrey Garber, president of Opuscom Group, which conducted the annual survey of gays and lesbians with Syracuse University's S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications. In 2002, just 15% of lesbians and 5% of gay men told the researchers they wanted children. "People are saying they're more comfortable with their sexuality," Garber said, "and that they have a right to a life partner, and along with that, if they have a loving home, why not a child?" The proportion of gay people surveyed who reported being out also increased from 93% to 97%. Of those responding this year, 21% of lesbians and 5% of gay men said they already have a child living at home. About 7,500 people completed the annual hour-long online survey, which was first conducted in 2001.
Two sets of parents in Massachusetts have sued the town of Lexington and its public school system because a teacher read a gay-positive fairy tale to their children's class of mostly 7-year-olds. King and King tells the story of a crown prince who rejects a bevy of beautiful princesses, rebuffing each suitor until falling in love with the prince. The two princes marry, sealing the union with a kiss, and live happily ever after. The lawsuit charges that the school system should have asked for parental consent before the story was read to the class. The complaint said the school has begun a process of intentionally indoctrinating very young children to affirm the notion that homosexuality is right and normal, in direct denigration of the plaintiff's deeply held religious faith. It also charges that Lexington broke a 1996 Massachusetts law requiring that parents be given prior notification of sex education lessons. Lexington Superintendent of Schools Paul Ash said the school was under no legal obligation to inform parents that the story would be read as part of a lesson about different types of weddings, insisting that including the story did not constitute sex education. "This school district is committed to a welcoming environment for all kids," he said. "We embrace the diverse nature of the community."
In 2005, GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, surveyed more than 1,700 lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender students between the ages of 13 and 20 from all 50 U.S. states and the District of Columbia. The results were released this week. Almost two-thirds of the respondents said they were verbally harassed because of their sexual orientation, and more than a third suffered physical harassment. About half reported being harassed for their gender identity, and 25% experienced anti-transgender physical harassment. The study also reported that only 16.5% of the students said that a school staff member intervened when they heard anti-gay insults. About 18% said they had actually heard staff making homophobic comments. 28% of the students surveyed had skipped school in the previous month because they felt unsafe. Queer students were more than 5 times more likely to cut class than the general student body, which, not surprisingly, resulted in their getting poorer grades. Of most concern to equality advocates is that there's been little positive change in the survey results since it was last conducted in 2003. Fewer students in 2005 could identify school staff that they felt comfortable speaking with about LGBT issues, and there's been no improvement in resources for them since 2003, the study found.
GLSEN's report also argues that generic anti-bullying laws that don't explicitly prohibit anti-gay harassment in schools are tantamount to no bullying laws at all, but that students from states with specific anti-bias laws often report better school experiences. While anti-discrimination laws helped students, certain policies hurt them, Glisson reports. Students in schools with abstinence-only sex education, for example, were more likely to experience anti-gay discrimination, according to the survey. It's kind of scary that something considered education is actually contributing to isolation and fear and harassment, says Judy Hoff, the Safe Schools coordinator at Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. The abstinence program says you don't have sex until you're married, she said. The side comment to gay and lesbian kids is, oh, by the way, you never get to have sex. You're a second-class citizen.
And finally, GLSEN's 10th annual National Day of Silence was held this week, with an estimated 500,000 queer and queer-supportive students at 4,000 schools across the U.S. participating. Students don't speak during the day and wear tags or hand out leaflets to explain how they feel muzzled and can't truly be themselves on campus. The event is also held to spotlight the pervasive problem of anti-queer bullying and harassment in schools. Dozens of Breaking the Silence rallies and events were also held during the week in communities across the country.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 29, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Kathy Sanchez.
The road to romance is no stroll through the Garden of Eden for Adam and Steve, the heroes of an over-the-top new romantic comedy. Our Steve Pride has preview clips and comments by star and director Craig Chester later in the program. This is Greg Gordon for This Way Out, and I'm in the spacious and new studios of John McMullen and Sirius OutQ Satellite Radio. John, thanks for spending some time with us on This Way Out.
It's a pleasure.
Is Sirius coverage basically United States or North America?
It's now because we have expanded it, and we have recently been licensed in Canada by the CRTC. We now have coverage of both the United States, the contiguous 48 United States, and Canada. We get into parts of Alaska, and we don't hit Hawaii because of where the satellites are. And it's amazing to have a technology that allows people to drive and hear the same crystal clear, you know, pop music station from Los Angeles to Kennebunkport, Maine. Mm-hmm, you know, I mean, if you're on this long drive, and this is, I think, one of the reasons why some of the biggest early adopters of satellite radio were long-distance truck drivers, because they didn't have to lose the stations and constantly be futzing with the knob and all that to find a station that would come in clean and all that. Mm-hmm. And I've made a couple of drives myself across the country, and it's unbelievable. Here you have 150 radio stations. So that takes us to the next level, which is that satellite radio becomes kind of the super provider of all of this content, which is very highly segmented. And so they have all these various genres that they can break the music out into. There's 65 commercial-free music channels. All the music stations are 100% commercial-free. Then you move over to the talk side, and the talk and news and sports and special information, that can get broken up so many different ways. And then, of course, there's the so-called king of all media, Howard Stern, who programs two channels. He's been a real friend to the gay community with regards to this station. He has been a major asset. He has pushed so many listeners. Even before he came to Sirius, he would, you know, openly talk about the gay station. In fact, he'd have his band of weirdos who would call into the shows, the various talk shows on OutQ, and prank us, and thought that he was gonna flap us. And I think he was always so amazed at just how well we played right along with it.
Well, he seems to have a definite fascination with lesbians.
He does at that.
And of course, let's get to the focus of this conversation, which is OutQ.
That's right. And there's a gay station.
Yes, which you are the founder, creator, chief cook and bottle washer.
Sirius OutQ, which is a GLBT 24/7 station on the talk spectrum at Sirius, became the very first in-house developed full 24/7 talk station built and owned by Sirius. Now, they had other stations where it was a hodgepodge of content from different syndicators and programming providers, and some where it was mostly programming from some syndicators originally, and then they brought a couple of their own hosts in to kind of fill in the gaps there. But the very first station that they built 100% internally homegrown was Sirius Aucu. So it was a real strong message to send about their support for, you know, doing this kind of programming. And it's been very successful for them, obviously. The station has grown. We originally started with 15 original hours of talk a day, and then we reran some. We've added some music programming now late at night and on the weekends, so LGBT artists get a place to get national airplay. The lineup of the day is we decided that people needed to wake up in the morning and know that not everything was wrong in the world today, to actually be able to laugh with a morning zoo type of show. Mm-hmm. And then to keep the mornings kind of light and fun and airy, we brought in Frank DeCaro, who does the Frank DeCaro show middays. And Frank is on, you know, basically at the end of morning drive on the West Coast. But he's the kind of guy who's going to, you know, bring in a lot of arts and entertainment type of stuff. And he used to be on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart doing the movie reviews and things like that. So he co-hosts that show with Doria Biddle, who's actually out of Los Angeles. And so the show exists from both coasts, LA and New York.
Yeah.
It's bi-coastal. And then in the afternoons, the early afternoons, East Coast time and midday West Coast time, Michelangelo Signorelli puts his firebrand of politics and and hot talk to work. And he's done some amazing stuff since he's been with us. We have a couple of rather naughty people who do a very provocative show that deals with sex and pop culture and stuff like that. It's called Derek and Romaine, and that's on for 4 hours in the evening. And then I come on from Los Angeles, and we've literally dubbed this show kind of the John McMullen Show is kind of the community center of the year. We try and bring people from all walks of life. And we built this lovely studio at the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, and we welcome the world to come and visit when they're in L.A., it's at the Village at Egg Gould Plaza, and it's just been really super nice to actually have more programming that captures the ability to touch more people around the country. And as people come in and visit from different places, to have literally a soapbox here for people to jump up on, whether they're on the phone or they're in person. I love it. And then all night long, Jeremy Hovies plays LGBT artists on a show called Last Call.
Now, it's my understanding that you can get Sirius OutQ and all the other channels on Sirius, even if you don't have a receiver in your car.
Yeah, I mean, they make radios for home, for car, for, you know, home and car and boombox. They make them for, you know, on nightstands now. I mean, it's just about, and there's also portable players now that they have.
Is there anything that you would like people to know about Sirius OutQ that we haven't talked about?
Sure. We'd love to have This Way Out on the air there, and I'm trying to work a way to make that happen because we have a great deal of respect. You know, Greg, a lot of people come in here and they're like, you know, oh, you're the founder of this and you've done that and you're like the granddad. I'm like, whoa, Greg Gordon, Lucia Chappelle, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, all those folks who have been working with Overnight Productions and This Way Out, they are the people who blazed this trail and made it possible for me and my colleagues here to actually have a shot at doing something. And so we're really grateful to you, and we want to do everything we can. And I just want to remind everybody who's within the sound of our voices right now that I hope that you'll write a check and that you'll support This Way Out, because this is a very important, valuable resource that reaches people well beyond my borders for Sirius Satellite Radio. It reaches people everywhere around the world, and that's really important that we don't lose this asset to our community. Please. And they didn't ask me to do this. Greg is sitting across the table right now looking at me like he's going to tear up. This Way Out is a very important and valuable resource, and we're very pleased to be in great company with a lot of professional, dedicated queers who love bringing you this information.
Thank you, John. John McMullen, the station manager of Sirius OutQ, the queer channel on Sirius Satellite Radio, channel 106. Thanks very much for spending some time with us on This Way Out.
Thank you.
This is Dorothy Allison, author of Bastard Out of Carolina and numerous trashy pieces. You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
If your heart always did what a normal heart should do, if you always play a part instead of being who you really are, then you might just miss the standing there. So instead of passing by, show him that you care. Instead of asking why me and why you, why not we two?
veteran indie actor and queer idol Craig Chester makes the leap to director's chair for the new film Adam and Steve, a romantic comedy about two gay men whose relationship blooms in the face of overwhelming odds. Chester brought preview clips and sat down with This Way Out's Steve Pride to talk about the film and about being openly gay in Hollywood.
Craig Chester surfed the early 90s wave of the new queer cinema, starring in such breakthrough indie films as Swoon, Grief, and Frisk. He is the author of Why the Long Face, The Adventures of a Truly Independent Actor, and he is the writer, director, and star of the new gay romantic comedy, Adam and Steve.
Somebody needs a drink?
No, I'm straight. Sober.
Really? Wow. I'd hate to be sober. That sucks. I don't see why sober people still get to smoke. Nicotine is such a drug.
Yeah, but nicotine doesn't make me wander through gay bars pinching my nipples and moaning, pick me to hot guys. Adam and Steve is about these two guys who meet in 1987 when they're 21.
Writer, director, actor, and author Craig Chester.
And they have this sort of disastrous one-night stand. And they meet again later, 17 years later now, but they don't recognize each other because they've sort of reinvented themselves. So the movie's sort of this suspense comedy, basically, where we're waiting for Adam and Steve to figure out that they met before in the 80s. And when they do find that out, the movie's really about how do they incorporate that into their current understanding of the relationship. That's the plot, but really that's just an excuse for a lot of over-the-top, retarded set pieces.
Adam and Steve also stars Craig's best friend Parker Posey, Saturday Night Live's Chris Kattan, and Broadway's Malcolm Getz, best known for his co-starring role on the TV show Caroline in the City.
I'm going to ask Adam to marry me.
Oh, my God!
Marry him? But you guys have only been going out for like a couple months.
Actually, it's almost been a year, Michael. Besides, my parents got married on the third date, and they're still together.
Well, you're only as monogamous as your options. I mean, your parents live in a trailer park
Excuse
in a field.
Excuse me? Only as monogamous as their options?
You know, it gets worse, Michael. I'm going to ask him to move in.
Oh, my God!
While acknowledging the film is first and foremost a romantic comedy, Craig asserts the characters of Adam and Steve are revolutionary in their own way.
You know, we're so inundated with images of perfection of 25-year-olds in Speedos. And a lot of gay men watch this film and have come up to me. It's like, I think they've never seen these images before in a way. And because we're showing these two 40-year-old guys, basically, who are trying to have a relationship. And it's not self-consciously political, but, you know, I've been all over the country doing Q&As with the film. And when I stand on the stage, I look out into the audience and 99% of the people in the theater do not look like underwear models.
The recent spate of gay-themed films means a certain question has been asked of half the straight actors in Hollywood. I didn't want Craig Chester to feel he was left out just because he was gay, so I had to ask.
Was it difficult kissing a man?
Yeah, Malcolm and I are both openly gay actors, and we're playing two gay guys in relationship. We kind of did our research, and that's never really happened before. And it's sort of sad to me in a way that we're this far along into the gay film movement that we've never had a gay love story with two openly gay actors playing boyfriends. And I've done a lot of movies where I had to do love scenes with a straight actor playing gay, and it's not fun. And since I was directing the movie, I didn't really want to have to deal with that. I wanted to have an actor who could bring his life experience to the role. It was a romantic comedy. So Malcolm and I sat around, we talked about boyfriends we've had. We put stuff into the script of moments that we'd had in real life as gay men. And I think that the movie's very authentic that way. And the thing that people have commented on about the film and about our relationship on screen is that there's all this kissing in the movie that's not like a big deal. It's sort of the everydayness of that relationship that I think is very unique, and we haven't really seen much of that before.
According to Craig Chester, since the film's completion, there has been one big surprise.
Man, it was hard to get the gay press behind us. The thing is that you're never a hero at home. Everyone is still way more interested in a straight actor playing gay than two out actors playing gay. I guess Malcolm and I thought we would be more sort of celebrated for that. I think the gay community and the gay media is way more interested in mainstream acceptance and in Hollywood approval. And, you know, and even like the GLAAD Awards, Charlize Theron and, you know, liking us and giving awards to straight people. And I think that if the gay community was more supportive of their own, I would be like, everybody come out of the closet. But it's so hard because you don't really get a lot of support from mainstream Hollywood. And also from the gay press and the gay community, you really have to beg for whatever scraps you're given. And when I started out, you know, it wasn't that way. And now it's really like everyone is so obsessed with getting the approval of mainstream Hollywood. And I really don't think that until I make a film in the Hollywood studio system that I'll actually get on the cover of The Advocate.
When his first film, Swoon, was released in 1992, the list of out gay actors read Craig Chester. While he doesn't regret being out, he doesn't believe the choice is any easier in today's Hollywood.
You know, for me, it was always like, I've always been out, and my first film, Swoon, was, you know, I was 25, and the first wave of queer cinema really came out of AIDS activism. Like, all those films were fueled by that kind of rage and those politics, because a lot of those filmmakers were involved in ACT UP and Queer Nation, and I was also, and so whenever I started working in films, it didn't make sense to me, coming from this sort of AIDS activist background, that I should suddenly, you know, start dating a girl and pretending like I'm straight. And that's really why I'm out, because it's completely tied into that time and place. But, you know, I think it's actually a little bit worse now for an openly gay actor. I think back then there was some hope, you know, that maybe we could really come out, you know, and it would work. And then it sort of happened a little bit with Ellen, and then no one else came out. And I think it sort of feels like this moment that passed in a way.
This has been a conversation with writer, director, actor, and author Craig Chester. Adam and Steve is from TLA Releasing and Funny Boy Films. More info can be found at adamandstevemovie.com, craigchester.com, and as always, prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Kathy Sanchez, Christopher Gall, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, Stephen Hunt, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Michael Callan sang Love Don't Need a Reason, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please visit thiswayout.org to see some good and not so good news about This Way Out and how you can help us stay on the air and choose from some unique LGBT history, music, and culture CDs as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Radio Veronica, West Point, Pennsylvania, WBCR, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, Tasman FM, Nubina, Tasmania, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all going to stay tuned.